Hi, everyone, and welcome to Dev Propulsion Labs, the podcast where we talk about the business of developer tools. I'm very excited to introduce today's guest. Please meet Michael Magan, co-founder and CEO of Tembo AI. We will talk about Tembo, we'll talk about San Francisco, we'll talk about different things, and I'm very excited to get this started. I want to first start with how I met Michael. I was at AI Engineer World Fair about a month ago, and as I was walking through the different startup booths, I saw this cute mascot. You guys have to check it out. It's this octopus. It's mint green. It's absolutely amusing. The cutest thing you've ever seen. And I had to stop by. So I kind of, you know, was intrigued before I even knew what Tembo is, but was it a calculated move? Do you do that on purpose?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like everything we do is, there's probably a purpose behind it, but that one in particular, we had a lot of thoughts about it. So we had two, I think, core thoughts. One was we're really tired of dev branding. It all looks almost identical, and we wanted something that really stood out, which I think our branding definitely stands out compared to most other dev tools. And so that was an important thing for us to be a bit different. I think both me and my co-founder think different, for lack of a better word. And so we wanted our brand to also feel different. And then another thing we felt was that a lot of AI startups' branding feels very kind of cyberpunk, dystopian vibes to me. And I think AI is actually far more about making products more friendly and human in many ways. And so we wanted a brand that reflected that, that what we think Tembo AI does will help make your software feel more friendly and feel more helpful and feel kind of like our helpful Tembo octopus thing that just feels like a friend versus just this kind of hardcore software type vibe. So yeah, definitely very calculated. And we had a lot of different directions that the brand could have gone. And this one just really stuck out to us. It was really interesting. A lot of my family thought this was a terrible idea. Everyone thought it was their least favorite because they thought it was the least business feel. They felt the least businessy. And then I sent it to some of my friends who are builders and people just loved it. I mean, everybody just thought this was the coolest brand that they'd seen. And so, yeah, that was really, well, and those are the people that we really wanted to connect with were builders. And so when my friends who are builders liked this one the most, it was just very obvious to us that this is the way we want. And this is the one me and my co-founder liked the most, but it helped to get that confirmation.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, this dystopian kind of like cyberpunk vibe. When I was at the AI fair, you just walk through the booths and it's, oh, yet another AI, you know, dev tool. The human aspect of it is kind of taken out and it's not approachable. It feels a little bit intimidating. And I feel that now in the age where the AI fatigue is so real, people are just like, can I not try another tool, please? And obviously we exist in a bubble of San Francisco where we see all the, you know, I mean, PostHog stands out just because they're kind of like the meme personality is just so funny and the banners all over the city are kind of like that. But I feel like DevTool branding feels a lot like it's similar. You know, it's very hard to memorize a new brand and Tembo definitely sticks out.
Yeah, we had a lot of people at the conference. And in some ways, we could have done a better job of communicating in our banner what we did. And that was just more that we've never done a banner before. So we didn't really know what it would look like or feel like.
Yeah.
And a ton of people stopped and just said, I don't know what you do, but I just want to talk to you because you look so different compared to everybody here. So I think you're definitely hitting the nail on the head.
That was my kind of next question. What was the response at the AI World Fair? Because people went there to fish for new ideas and to make connections, to kind of understand what are the new tools that are available. What was the response you got?
It was really positive. I what I told a lot of people afterwards is that my experience very rarely is beyond what I expected. I think why I'm a founder is I tend to be disappointed quite often. Everything I do, I think about, I'm like, oh, I wish this could be a little bit better, or why doesn't it do this way? So I'm often disappointed. And AI Engineer World Fair was it like exceeded my expectations. But both of the conference was just really well put together. And so great job to all the organizers. And yeah, just people were, it was a great conference all overall. But then it was kind of a big swing for us to sponsor something like that. A few people said that to us. But we felt pretty different from a lot of the, like pretty much every booth there. We were, and people pointed that out to us. They first of all, you feel very different. Second, there's a ton of tooling on the backend side of AI. And there's just not, in my opinion, enough tooling and enough good tooling for the UX of interacting with AI. And this is, I think, one of the reasons that AI fatigue is so strong, is that in many ways, what's been driving AI product development right now is primarily backend engineers. And you see this across the board at hackathons. And this is actually what inspired Tambo at the hackathon that, well, I mean, not entirely. There's more story to it. But I remember many of the demos I was seeing at hackathons where the agents were really impressive in what they could do. But then the actual experience of working with them, I just remember thinking, I would never use this. It's just, it is not intuitive how I'd use this. It doesn't feel good. And feelings matter in software. And so for us, that has been what a lot of people have connected with the Tambo brand, but also just the product itself, is that we have looked at the AI problem through the lens of UI and UX, and how do we make products that don't just feel good, but feel better than what existing software can offer, and uses AI to make it more flexible, easier to use, more powerful, versus just let's slap an AI on this thing.
I vibe code little apps for myself all the time, right? Yeah. And there is this last mile problem that's extremely painful. You know, when you're 99% there and then you're stuck on this 1% and then you begin to edit and things just fall apart in front of your eyes. It's very painful.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like setting this huge mission in front of you of reimagining how software is built. Basically, you want to create this custom experience when somebody uses an app, you know, to have it custom made for them. This is very ambitious, right? And perhaps this is how software is going to be in the future. You know, it will not be this like cookie cutter same software for everyone, but instead very customized, very unique experience for each user. So the hackathon you just hosted last weekend was aiming at that, right? At building custom software. Talk to me about it. What were the results? What were the groups creating? What was surprising for you in this hackathon?
First of all, me and all the organizers were totally blown away by how much excitement and interest for the hackathon. I mean, we would have been happy if 50 or 100 people signed up, but we had almost 450 people sign up for the hackathon. Max and I talked about it probably a month prior, but at a very high level of, hey, do you want to host a hackathon together? That was the conversation pretty much, and just some high-level thoughts of what we would do. And then pretty much started marketing it 2 weeks out and figuring everything out as we go. Like, we were figuring out judging day of hackathon, how would that work? And we're still in that process. So announcing the winners sometime this week, probably just before this comes out. But yeah, we had 66, I think, demos submitted, and the Discord. And really what I'd say the best part for me was the community was really great. People were really supportive. They're actually, I was just before getting on this call, I was in the Discord, and we made them post their demos publicly. And so a bunch of people had gotten a lot more engagement than they'd ever gotten before on their posts. And they were sharing screenshots and saying how just even that was a great experience. And when they were posting in the channel their demos, everybody responding and going, oh, this is super cool. This is really great. I went and commented on it. And so, yeah, just really great community, which I think is the most important thing with hackathons. I've been to some hackathons that are great and some that don't feel good, and you know what they're like. But the outcome was a lot of people had some really interesting ideas of how to personalize software. But a lot of people came in and said, I had not really thought about this and I wasn't sure how to do it. And some of the sponsors like us, Tambo AI and Lingo.dev, which does translations, and Autumn, which does like really flexible pricing plans. It was like really a good opportunity to explore, you know, how could I make my product or a product in general more flexible and not so rigid? And overall, really happy with it. Yeah, we're still judging, so we'll see who the winners are. There's some pretty cool demos. I'm excited to announce it. One of the reasons I was super excited to do this hackathon in particular with Max, the founder of Lego.dev, first of all, we're just friends and we've known each other for a long time, or a few years. It feels like a long, in startup world, it feels like a very long time. One of my first products I built was this like AI automation tool for Instagram. And I built everything in English. But then I started getting all of these users from all over the world using it in different languages because the LLMs just could auto-translate or auto-figure out that, even though the software was all in English. And I think I, at one point, translated in Spanish with an early version. But I haven't worked on that product since. It just kind of runs on its own. But people use it all over the world in different languages. And I don't think people realize what an unlock that is, that I worked at many big tech companies where we had to spend millions of dollars trying to internationalize products just to make it accessible within existing countries. Internationalization is not just going to different countries, although that's a big part of it. You know, in the US, 40%, I think, of Americans, Spanish is the first language or something like that. 30% of Americans, their Spanish is like the first language or their primary language or one of the languages they speak regularly. So even just in the US, if you wanted to make software more personal, more custom, just having it in their language is a pretty massive unlock. But then what's really great about LLMs is I can create my prompt in English. I can have all my software engineers only know English, which, you know, many of them, that's like their primary language in the US, but then serve people who speak French, who speak different languages, without having to go through the same pains it would have been to translate that in all these different languages, deal with all these other issues. So for me, I think that's just also a really great example of how software will feel more personal. You'll, even small startups in the next year will probably just have it in different languages, which is just totally mind-boggling to me. Like, I remember companies I worked at spending months, years thinking about translation just because of how much work it would be to do and how expensive. So yeah, it's like, that's just one example of many where the barriers to making software feel personal are just dropping so fast, and they're becoming really cheap and easy to do.
If we think about DevTooling, documentation has always been in English. You know, it's something that like engineers across the globe use the same documentation for different languages or libraries or whatever. And now it's become more accessible, you know? So I think we are onto better things. Speaking of marketing to developers, I saw this post on your LinkedIn where you said that like your marketing intern made you do it, and your marketing intern is onto something. I think kind of coming back to the idea of your mascot, having that approachable personal brand, you know, where you see the founder, you hear them speak about the product, you understand who they are as a person, it creates this unique connection and kind of it makes it a little bit more convincing, right? The story around the product. Is it hard for you to market to developers?
You know, I think I've been on this journey the last 2 years, just learning how to market in general. But I think that what it really boils down to me is that I think we're seeing this phase change in startups where they are becoming far more community driven. In you want to develop a community of people around your product that believe in it. And one of the best ways to, and really I would just say the barrier to creating that kind of community has changed, is way easier now than it was 10 years ago. And the main way to do that is through content. And so I've heard a lot of different people talk about startups, and they say that startups have now moved from being, you know, product driven to content driven in some ways, where it's about the content about the product. And then the product is almost second, you know, they're investing tons of time and money in the content. And then we've also just seen that with like marketing in general. It's moved towards influencers, it's moved towards content creators. And I think that's starting to happen in the software space where it's about the product, but also about the people behind it and the community that they're creating. And that is something that we're really trying to invest in. And yeah, I think it's great. I think it's actually a great change in product because people used to talk a lot about being user-centric and customer-centric. And now it's just much easier to actually be far more user-centric and customer-centric. And one of those ways is building community, generating content, getting people to engage with that content and give you feedback about what you're building and what you're doing and your strategy and different things you're doing.
I've heard this statement that marketing should be like 70% fun and 30% about the actual product and features. Do you agree with that?
I think that marketing should be engaging. And fun is maybe another word for engaging, but I think the best marketing is useful first and then sales. I saw this really great ad. I was part of this builder community in NSF about a year ago. And we're actually over a year ago now. Wow, it's gone by fast. But they show this really great ad where it starts out almost just like a traditional YouTube video where it's going to talk about, I think it was talking about Messi and how he scans the field 7 times before he passes or shoots. And he does that. That's like 2x more than any footballer or soccer player. And so you're just watching it. I just thought it was a YouTube video, some YouTube content creator. And then it slowly at the end transitions into, oh, we built this software. It's a VR headset that will train you to look around more before you shoot. And if you're paying attention, it was very clear when it switched into being more of an ad, but it kind of tricked you into watching it in a way that you weren't disappointed at the end. You by the time they got to the advert for their product, you were bought in. If I was a football player, I probably would have thought, ooh, where's my credit card? How do I get this tool to help me be as good as Messi? But it didn't just say that out of the gate. It didn't just go, buy this and you'll be as good as Messi. It really drew you into it with the story and the information and then explained to you how this product helped you solve your problem. I think that to me is the best product. I do see a lot of people go viral on Twitter, but what they don't show you, and I think you'll find, is that the conversion between that virality and users is almost as important as how viral you go. And if you just create really good content, but you aren't making it clear how this thing will help them solve their problem, I think that that's a pretty big gap for a lot of the content I see on Twitter and Instagram these days.
When it comes to being a CEO and a founder, what's the most difficult thing for you? What's something that keeps you up at night?
Prioritization. I would say prioritization is just the biggest thing for me that keeps you up at night. I just almost always am constantly asking myself, is this the most important thing I can be doing? Is this the most important thing we can be building in the product right now? Is this the most important type of use case or problem that we're trying to solve? And I think that that's probably true for most founders. And then I think, especially when it comes to the company growth, you know, what are we doing the right things to grow the company? Are we growing at the right pace? You know, but just, I think it's ultimately like prioritization / you know, what's the right thing for the company at this time?
And what has been surprisingly easy?
You can just get a lot more done with less people. And I feel like a lot of early stage startups or just products, honestly, just tech and products in general, is when you wanted to do more, you had to hire more people, and that just really increases your coordination problem. And coordination is in many ways the least fun part of building. It's, you know, making sure everyone's on the same page, alignment, and just with a smaller team that's more productive, you really spend a lot less time aligning. You know, it's kind of wild in some ways. I'm in far fewer meetings with my team, but we're getting so much more done. Maybe because we have less meetings, but also because the technology, you know, using AI software has helped stuff. Like one example that for me that's really fun is we have this AI coding assistant that's integrated into Slack and Linear and all these other products or other places that we kind of at GitHub and we interface with, has access to all of our code. And I now spend a lot of time just talking to it about different things that I'm thinking about. And it's become almost like a technical partner that I use to kind of spitball ideas, ask questions, have it research something for me. Hey, I want to do this. What are the best practices for this? What are other people doing? And I still spend a lot of time and effort working on it, but my work is much higher level now and much more as kind of an editor versus having to go and collect all the information and I can even have it criticize my idea, like, hey, I think this is what I want to do. I like this. Come up with some things I hadn't thought of. And you know, we still do that as a team, and we do have this in person and humans in the loop. And there's a lot of things that these AIs are missing. But it just, you know, we'll have this, like, I'll have conversations in our Slack and we'll talk through all these problems. The AI agent will ask some questions. And then at the end, I'll just say, hey, create a linear issue. And you'll do a pretty good job of just, you know, taking what we did and turning it into an issue. And then that just makes it so much easier for us later when somebody's implementing. We've already kind of thought through all of that. That's one thing that I'm just really impressed and surprised by, how it's made my life so much easier.
Yeah, and it's crazy how much progress, you know, there's been in such short time span. Even us, like, sometimes we create illustrations for our blog with AI, and image generation has, you know, changed tremendously in the past, like, 2 years. It's crazy the progress that has been made. Yeah. So I'm also very excited about the tools that help and remove kind of friction, process friction, you know, that's unnecessary a lot of the times. It's very liberating. I also wanted to ask you about your co-founder. How do you guys meet? How do you guys decide to build something together?
I'll take a little step back. So kind of where Tamboy I started, and this is how we met. So I was working on another product. It was an AI small business site generator. And so it scraped their site and then generated a whole new page for them. And I had all these React components that I wanted the LLM to be able to kind of interface with when it was generating this landing page, or their landing page. And yeah, really cool idea. Probably would have been a great business. Probably a lot easier than what we're building now. But I ran into having to write a lot of boilerplate code, and I wasn't really impressed with some of the other solutions. And so I went to a hackathon where I basically just said, like, hey, here's my code and here's what I did. Let's just turn this into an open source project. You know, had a small team and my co-founder was on that team. And actually my goal at that time was I just wanted somebody else to get excited about it and work on these problems so that I could focus on the other business. And that is kind of ended up what happening. So he kept working on it after the hackathon as a side project, and we kept kind of chatting and working together on it. And what we realized the more we got to know each other is we both had independently over the previous maybe year and a half come to the same conclusion of where we thought UI and UX was going and where software was going over the long term, not just in the next month or two, but we were thinking, you know, 5-10 years from now, what is software going to look and feel like? And I, in some ways, had been the catalyst of thinking of what are some of the early problems that developers are running into doing more simple versions of this. And he said this to himself. He's like, oh, I had these thoughts, but I hadn't really thought about or hadn't had a good solution for how do you start on this problem. And as we got to know each other, we realized it's rare to find another startup founder. Most founders will tell that to you, that it's hard to find a founder in general. It's especially hard to find a founder who both really agrees with where you think the world is going in a way that, like, many people don't, right, at that time and maybe still to this day, and is also willing to take a huge bet with their career, their, like, money and their time on that thesis. So yeah, so that's how we got to know each other, and then we just kind of grown to become friends, and we really balance each other out in different ways. I tend to be, I like to joke, chaotic good, and I think he tends to be more even keel. And that's a really good balance, I think, in a startup founding team. Like, one person is just trying to drive things forward and worrying about things. And the other person is able to kind of calm things back down and bring us back to, hey, you know, we're on a good track. So yeah, it's been good for me, at least. I hope it's good for him as well.
What's your next big goal for Tembo?
So we built this MVP I mentioned kind of at that hackathon. We got some early users of that, and we realized a lot of the, like, problems with it. And last year we raised a little bit of capital and brought some people onto the team and started, basically rewrote the whole thing from scratch. And just in the last maybe month and a half, we feel like we have a very good base, and we're just iterating really fast and adding new functionality, getting more users. And we've really focused on trying to make the developer experience of going from idea to solution really fast. And we're starting to see that happen. The hackathon is a great example. We had a lot of people within just a few hours come up, you know, start using it and using it effectively and getting to some kind of new solution. And we've also seen people just discover it independently and have that experience where somebody found it over the weekend, built a POC, and sent that to their CEO or CTO, you know, by Monday morning. And so we've really focused on that. And we're still improving the DevEx experience, the getting started experience. And what I think our focus on and our next big milestone is going to be just around getting this more into the wild, getting this into bigger and bigger experiences, kind of moving from hobbyists and explorers to larger companies. And actually the conference really, I think, accelerated that. We had a lot of bigger companies who had built, in their own words, a POC of what we had built and ran into a lot of issues. I think one of them explicitly told one of the engineers on our team, and we'd love to replace it with something like what you've built, which is exactly what you want to hear, is somebody, a developer exactly. trying to build something, realize that it's hard and that they don't want to spend time working on that. They want to work on the more exciting or more maybe specific innovations to their company and their product. And so I think those are the big kind of priorities for us right now, is more kind of getting more into the market, getting this out there. We've worked on some MCP stuff that we're excited about. We've added authentication recently, and we're working on MCP authentication so that you can have multi-users using different MCP servers. And yeah, there's just a bunch of stuff that we want to build out, but we're building it out now more and more just based on what our users are needing. And that's exciting.
It does sound very exciting. And I want to congratulate you on that, because it's so important to see that positive response from the public. And I hope you have more moments like this hackathon and the actual, you know, products that people build and share. And it just makes it all very exciting. So I think we're coming to an end of our interview. And my last question that I ask all my guests is what I call a warm fuzzy question. What makes you feel great about what you're doing right now?
For me, what gets me really excited is when I see a developer using our product and building something that I didn't expect they would build with it. That to me is like cloud nine moment. It really makes up for, I think, all of the stress and pain of being a startup founder. One thing that I just want to add to that. So for us, me and my co-founder really felt strongly about this when we started, and this is something we connected on, was we really wanted Tambo to feel for the developer and product team and for the community. And we wanted it to really feel like we wanted you to be successful. Like, it's not about Tambo AI or Michael Magan getting successful. It's about the developers who use this, the product teams who use this, building incredible experiences with AI that make them super successful. And so when I see somebody else using our product being successful, that makes me feel good. That's the thing that gets me excited.
Basically, now you have the stage to invite people to try Tambo. How can they find it?
If you go to tambo.co, that's our main website, and it links to our open source repo. It also has a really simple demo on our landing page so you can get a sense of what you can do with it and some example code. And then we have quick starters that you can go to, and we have a CLI that you can install templates, a couple template projects with, you know, in a few lines of code, or sorry, a few CLI commands is a better way to put it. And then we also have some CLI tooling for adding it to existing React projects. But yeah, that's how I go to tambo.co to get started. And yeah, you can have a example MCP server getting data and then displaying it as a graph, and some, for example, within a few minutes, typically.
That sounds awesome. Thank you so much, Michael. It was such a pleasure to talk to you, and we are rooting for you. As I always say to my guests, I'm super excited to see DevTool founders succeed. So we can't wait for your new victories and successes. So thank you so much.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much, Victoria. This was a great conversation. My first podcast experience was the best one I've had. So
awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks. Thank you for catching yet another episode of Dev Propulsion Labs. We at Evil Martians transform growth stage startups into unicorns, build developer tools, and create open source products. If your developer tool needs help with product design, development, or SRE, visit evilmartians.com/devtools. See you in the next.